We have the full HES committee present now. This is Health, Social Services, Education and Social Service Committee, and we have all members present. We have Senators Elton, Thomas, Calgary, and I'm not forgetting your name. I just couldn't think of it at the moment. Dyson. I wanted to say Fred, and that wouldn't have been appropriate. But it's Senator Dyson's. We all are present, and we have a presentation that's going to be given us to us today. I was hoping there would be other staff members that might be able to come for the orientation here. We have Tammy Salvador, and we also have the Commissioner of Education present. Is there other staff that's going to present also? Okay, you may come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Carlene Jackson, Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services, and with me is Tammy Sandoval with the Office of Children's Services. And we're very pleased to be with you today, and what we'd like to do is I'd like to kind of give you a briefing on how we got to where we are in terms of being able to give you a review of the Office of Children's Services today, and then Ms. Sandoval is going to take you through what we've actually learned through the process of this review. And we would appreciate, with your indulgence, if you would let us go all the way through the review and hold your questions, write them down as you go through, because there are actually four components of this review, and it's possible that your questions may get answered during the course of the presentation, and that way we can maximize the time for everyone.
That sounds good.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to start by reminding us all that over the course of a four-year period from 2001 to 2005, we had four different leaders of our Children's Services Agency. At the time in 2001, it was, of course, the Division of Family and Youth Services, went through a serious reorganization in 2002-03, and is now the Office of Children's Services. So there's been quite a period of instability for the agency until the last couple of years. 2 years ago, in March of 2005, Tammy took over leadership of the Office of Children's Services after a year here in Alaska with our agency, and she has many years of experience in child protection in other areas of the country. And since then, we've begun to see quite a bit of stability, although we still have a long way to go. A year ago, in March of 2006, which was 6 months after I became the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, Tammy and I looked at each other and said, there's about to be a transition in our department, and we need to be planning for that so that whoever's sitting in the chairs that we now sit in has the information and the data they need to be able to continue to work in a positive way with the Office of Children's Services. And so part of what we looked at was trying to build on the work that was being done through the Federal Performance Improvement Plan, because there were some positive improvements there, look at how we worked with the Citizen Review Panel, which was established in 2002 without really clear definitions of the working relationship between the Office of Children's Services and that panel, and figure out how we could make sure that whoever was in these roles would be able to do their job effectively. And so what we chose to do was bring in a consultant, and after much look at what was out there, and Tammy can speak to this in more detail, the group that was chosen was also the group that provides technical assistance for the federal government through all 50 states around performance improvement plans, and they'd already been working with our state. And so we chose to have them come in and do a review of the Office of Children's Services, looking at the organization in terms of structure, looking at the community perspective or perceptions of what goes on there, what's good, bad, and ugly, and looking at our policies and procedures and our training to see what we could do differently so that we could move to the next level with making sure we're doing the best we can to keep kids safe. The review was completed in November of 2006, which was just at the point where we had a transition in leadership, we had an election, and so then we began to work with the Department of Law to say, okay, we have this great review, now what do we do to get it in the right hands to be able to have people act on this when they're in new roles? And we initially had talked with them about having it go to the transition team, which they told us was not appropriate in that if it was released to the transition team, it would have to be released to the public at the same time, and we weren't sure who would even be in what leadership roles at that point in time. So when the new administration came in and we had a new governor in December of 2006 and a new attorney general, one of the first things I did was sit down with the new attorney general before he'd even knew who all his staff were and what was in his book of business, and said, we need to talk about the Office of Children's Services and this review that we've done, because I really want, in the spirit of truth and transparency and moving forward, to be able to get this information out to the legislature, the governor, and the public. And he said, I'll get back to you on that. And thankfully, he was very quick about getting back to us, and by February, we were taking a look at how we could, in fact, roll out the information in these reports, because it's a substantial amount of information. What you're going to find is that it's not a surprising kind of information. What we've done in rolling out the report is Tammy and I sat down with some of her key leaders and talked about the report. Tammy has also met with, I believe, all but one office of Children's Services in different regions across the state to talk about the report. We've briefed the governor's office and the lieutenant governor's office, and now we appreciate the opportunity to brief the legislature, beginning with this committee. And what we want to be sure that we're all doing is recognizing that we've got a long way to go. We still have some problems. We've got some structural foundation problems that we want to work on. And we don't only want to work on them in the context of, here's the budget, therefore we're going to talk about XYZ piece of the system. We want to say, during the next 4 years at least, here is our plan to move forward to improve the Office of Children's Services, taking into consideration things like the workload study, the citizen review panel work, and everything else going on out there. We want to work together with our stakeholders. We all want the same things. We want safe kids. We want strong families. And so I want to, again, thank all of you for your support in letting us do this. And I want to thank Tammy for her leadership. Without that key foundation of being able to say, yes, we've got some things that we need to talk about, we need to make them public, we need to work together, we would not be able to get to the place that we're at today. I also want to thank our staff out in the field. I think our frontline social workers have the hardest job, bar none, in the state of Alaska. They work very hard at what they do. We want to work as hard as they do to make sure that we're providing them with the tools they need in terms of policy, in terms of training, and in terms of our being able to retain the good folks that we need to have to do our work and help them move forward. So with that, I will defer to Ms. Sandoval, and again, thank you for your providing this opportunity for us.
Okay, welcome, Tammy.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Tammy Sandoval, and I head up the Office of Children's Services for the state of Alaska. Again, thank you for the opportunity. I know that time is precious. Your time is precious, and I appreciate your time and attention to the Office of Children's Services. As the commissioner said, we had the contractor take a look at four areas, that being how the Office of Children's Services was organized, and specifically the local office and the state office interface. What we had been hearing from our staff was a lot of concern about communication, about we didn't know and how come we didn't know, and so we wanted to have our contractor take a special look at that. The way that they did that was to do an online employee morale survey, of which I'm happy to say there was a 70% response rate. So 70% of our staff weighed in and gave their opinions about issues having to do with our structure. The contractor did focus groups with employees and also did individual interviews both in the local and state office. I'd like to present some of the highlighted findings. You have a copy of the entire report. I picked out the things that were probably most important to me, but you may find other things as you review the reports as you go along. I decided to start with the things that are most in need of improvement so we could end on things that are more successful. First, we learned through the employee survey, the online survey, that 79% of OCS staff do not feel that they are included in agency decision making. 72% feel that there is a lack of trust between staff and management. 71% said that there is a lack of openness and downward communication. 28% said that there's organizational communication is good. 29% said training is good to excellent. As you may note, like I did when I read those, there's a lot of work to be done with regard to involvement of all staff at all levels in the Office of Children's Services and communication that needs to be improved as well. On the flip side, 73% of the staff who responded said their job motivation is high. 70% said that they consistently receive support from their immediate supervisor. 68% said that they are happy working at the Office of Children's Services. And 67% are personally concerned about being high performers. For me, that says we have a lot to go on. The fact that workers on the front line and workers in their individual roles feel that committed and that we have that kind of motivation says that we have a lot to work with regard to improving in the future. Some of the other findings that came from the focus groups and individual interviews include the contractor saying that he felt that participants were very forthright, open, and honest, which is a good thing for folks to be in an organization. There's a solid understanding of the mission, that they feel a sense of mutual support within their local offices, that the staff support our new safety assessment model, believe that it will improve practice with families, but are concerned about how to do it all and the implementation. They note problems specific to OCS at large regarding communication, leadership, training, turnover, workload, policy design, and the distribution of our policies, and system supports for their work. They note that communication is inconsistent between the local office, the regional offices, and state office. That decision-making regarding policy design and implementation is not transparent enough. They wonder why we made the decisions we did regarding policies or procedures. And that communication between the various functions within OCS are not as communicative or sharing of information, such as investigations to permanency to the licensing of foster homes. That there's a perception by staff that problem employees are not dealt with, that holding people accountable is an ongoing and pervasive problem at all levels, that training for staff, for new workers and for seasoned workers is inadequate, that more workers are needed to meet the workload demands, salaries should be higher, supervisors require social work degrees currently, that's an issue for them, and that ORCA, our management information system, our case record keeping system, is moving fast enough to keep up with the changes that we're making in the field. They noted that organizational climate varies, but that many perceive it to be unfriendly and dysfunctional, and that too much clerical staff is required of frontline staff. They make recommendations that suggest things like considering what works in one part of the state may not work in another, that we are to clarify responsibility, authority, accountability of administration, both at the local, regional, and state office level, that we should increase clerical staff, develop a support group for workers, continue to develop our training program for new and experienced workers, reduce workload, reassess the social work requirement for supervisors, hold people accountable, ORCA experts, that ORCA is our management information system, experts in every office, physically separate the local and regional office, develop and lay out a communication strategy linked to the mission of the agency, add services to children and families, expand an initiative we have in Anchorage called Family to Family, where we bring families in and we do team decision making that really involves the family in their own planning, expand that statewide, and increase our efforts and continue to engage in the efforts that we have going on statewide regarding disproportionality, which is the overrepresentation of minority children in the child welfare system. I was glad to hear that they thought that was a priority as well. I wanted just to note a few things that we're doing so far. These are not so new and different, and so we began improvement in communication by beginning a monthly Office of Children's Services newsletter, appropriately named The Pipeline. We tried to get some momentum going toward that. We're going to keep doing the annual worker morale survey to try to look at trends and whether we're making improvements in the areas that are of our concern. We're going to continue our safety assessment process. The governor's budget includes 6 new frontline positions. We are going to continue to work and improve and revise as necessary our retention and recruitment plan for frontline workers, emphasis on retention and then recruitment. We're working and are waiting for final approval on a non-licensure requirement for supervisors. That's so the folks that aren't licensed social workers in the Office of Children's Services can have more of a career ladder and move into supervisor positions when they're qualified to do so. Mm-hmm. Another area that we're working on is what I've termed resolving minor irritants, the day-to-day things that frontline workers struggle with and prevent them from having a smooth work day. That things that we can affect in short order rather than those really huge things that will continue to take time to improve. We've engaged in judicial and community meetings to talk about the new safety assessment process that will be happening around the state in the upcoming months. And last but far not by in the least, we're always looking for ways to increase efforts in our area of the prevention of child abuse and neglect. Next, the second report has to do with community relationships, and I dare say that that's one of the things that gets the most attention because it's the most visible, and it's the most it's a way in which we have the most contact with the folks that we work with. And so we asked the contractor to look at doing focus groups around the state, specifically in the Mat-Su area, the Wasilla office, Anchorage office, and the Juneau office. There wasn't quite enough time and enough resources to do those focus groups statewide, so those were the areas that we chose to focus on, as well as the contractor doing 12 key informant interviews. And what those were the heads of agencies that have a statewide focus. So we didn't just look at the Mat-Su, Anchorage, and Juneau areas, but rather get a statewide perspective about how we're doing from agency heads. We asked them to give us their impressions of OCS, the impressions that they hold of us, how effective we are in carrying out our child protection responsibilities, and the relationship between the Office of Children's Services and community agencies. What we learned from and what the report indicates is that generally professionals value and respect the work of the Office of Children's Services, that impressions tend to be more positive than views held by those of the general public. That stands to reason that most of what gets reported tends to be high-profile cases, and we're continuing to work on getting other good messages and positive messages about what we're doing out. Thankfully, we have a communication team that helps us with that. And what we learned were managers at the regional and state level are viewed in a highly positive manner. Line staff are not viewed in as positive a manner and as a manner as managers. That still is an issue that line staff are slow to return phone calls, or in some cases not at all. But even the harshest critics express their appreciation for the work that workers and supervisors do every day. That our new safety assessment model, being more family-centered, is viewed as a step in the right direction. But that wide variation exists in the quality of work, in the ability to form positive working relationships, and the level of responsiveness from worker to worker and office to office. How well we communicate with other professionals and their willingness to share information are two areas that the most inconsistencies are seen around the state, that those issues are viewed as a matter of personalities rather than and the culture of the office rather than anything that's in our policy or procedures or set or expected by leadership. In fact, the opposite is true, that we do expect staff to be very responsive and be good community partners. Several of particular note that you'll see in the reports, several of the key informants expressed concern about the Mat-Su field office and its reputation for being difficult to work with. general perception was that agencies in the Wasilla area are not working well with the Office of Children's Services, and the Office of Children's Services is not working well with their community partners. That's of special note to us. It has come up in different ways in the last year to 2 years, most notably by the Citizen Review Panel last year. Communication between the Office of Children's Services and community agencies was identified as one of the top areas where disagreements or conflict are likely to occur. And the contractor tells us, much like what we all know, that it's about communication, communication, and communication. There was a note that our work is better with regard to our relationships with the tribal community, but there's a perception that significant areas, significant issues still remain. That there was a suggestion that we need to coordinate more closely with tribal agencies on completing investigations, and that there's still a wish that the Office of Children's Services were able to place children needing to be in an out-of-home setting with tribally licensed foster homes. Recommendations that were given to us is to retain good staff and direct service positions so that we have sufficient resources to handle and achieve manageable workloads. Of course, improve responsiveness, return phone calls, improve our public image, educate the public on our work. And I just want to pause to note and thank the citizens who wrote two letters to the editor of the Anchorage Daily News this week about that they respected and valued our work as well, and I was very appreciative of that. It's for me, it says that things are starting to make a difference, because that doesn't happen as often as it has happened lately. Support and encourage local offices to conduct community outreach activities. Develop system to gather feedback from key organizations, including our community stakeholders, families themselves, and foster families that serve our foster children. Supervisors are key to ensuring good practice in decision making, and we need to engage in more cultural sensitivity training. The contractor recommends that we develop clear expectations and guidelines on the sharing of information on cases, and that local and regional offices need to work in a more open and transparent manner. Wanted just to note a couple of things that we've done so far. Upon taking being appointed in the position in 2005, one of the first things I did was to issue what we call a program instruction. I issued that on Halloween. Perhaps that was not a timely, not timely, but it was all about returning phone calls and returning emails and being more responsive, that was one of the ways that we could most share what we're doing and why, and educate and involve our community partners. I'm a little bit disheartened that after 2 years, or I guess it would be a year, that we still have room to grow and room to improve in that area. Annual surveys are something that our quality assurance unit has done for 2 years, and they're posted online on our website, and they're annual surveys that go out to our consumers, the families that we serve, to tribal organizations, to foster parents, to service providers, those who work with our families, and the judicial community. And again, they're posted on our website, that annual survey from last year. But what I realize in the reading of this is that more education needs to happen about that information being out there and the work being done. I'm also glad to say that the commissioner led us in a process at the department level to put out and develop and distribute policies and procedures in February of 2006 that had to do with us having confidentiality. Policy and procedures that have to do with us sharing information within the department from division to division. What we know is that many of the divisions within the department serve the same families, and so she made it able for us to share information freely with one another, those who are working with the same family. Mm-hmm. We have also developed and released, with the Department of Law's help, frequently asked questions about confidentiality. It's one of those things that comes up quite a bit. the Office of Children's Services staff refer to confidentiality at times when they might otherwise be partnering with communities, and we have also posted the frequently asked questions to the OCS website so that those confidentiality issues are transparent as well. We've worked extensively with the Department of Law on tribally licensed foster homes and our ability to place Alaska Native children in tribally licensed foster homes with limited success. It's an issue that needs to keep on being dealt with as we go along. We've been holding community meetings regarding our new safety assessment model, and all in all trying at every opportunity to provide as much openness and as much availability as we can to being more transparent in our work. That's why we appreciate the opportunity to present to you today. The third report that we asked for and we have information about is policy. And we asked the contractor to look at our policies and procedures from the time the report is made, there's a suspicion of abuse or neglect, through the investigation, that being the time of case transfer to ongoing, if it needs to be opened and worked for an ongoing period. And very interesting to me was how they labeled the report. That is the policy that regulates practice and decision making during the investigation. And we specifically asked them to evaluate our substance and content, evaluate guidance and direction that we were giving to staff, evaluate the clarity of the intervention approach, and last but not least, evaluate the form in writing. And I note the label of the report, that being policy that regulates practice and decision making, because that's what we heard, is that while our policy and procedures go through those things that must be done to comply with policies and procedures, the contractor noted that that policy should state the beliefs and the values of the organization. That in the section that they reviewed, which was not the whole policy manual, there was no reference to belief or values or to the mission of the organization, that being stronger families, safer children, or the objective of intervention and the desired results, which I think is notable. Policy should clearly identify, define, and explain concepts, but ours lacked some of that. They indicated in the report that the quality of writing varies from acceptable to poor, that policy is at times written in ways that likely contribute to confusion or misunderstanding, and that there's a need for more precision. The next note that they make that most sticks out for me in this report is that there's an assumption that the reader will know what isn't stated. I think that that's key, because what we count on new workers to be able to rely on is policies and procedures in addition to supervision and training. And we also refer our community stakeholders to our policies and procedures. We have them posted online, and we often refer folks to our policies and procedures so that folks know why we do what we do. So hearing that there's an assumption that the reader will know what isn't stated is key, because I realize in reading this and thinking about our policies and procedures that we need to be more clear in our intent, in our meaning, and what's expected with regard to decision making and practice. They tell us that there's the use of imprecise words that are complex and can carry different meanings, that there's a serious challenge in writing child welfare policy at a level that's easy to read and understand. They tell us that we use acronyms. We know that and are working hard not to. That we refer to federal mandates and we use federal language, which is not always as understandable as we need it to be for new staff. And that it's usually written by folks who have been in the child welfare field, such as myself, for a very long time. And there probably is an assumption that I make about writing policies and procedures that isn't as clear as it needs to be. So that was really eye-opening to me. They tell us that the organization of policy has some problems, that there's no discernible, organized approach that is sustained throughout all of policy, that policy statements or content were out of context, that there needs to be we need to provide absolute, reasonable, and understandable direction to staff, that there were times in the what they read that we reinforce a minimum effort rather than best practice. I think it's key as well. That policy issues about practice or decision-making in some instances are given limited attention. That guidance and direction is ineffective when several policies are collapsed into one. They give an example in the report that in one policy we refer the reader to another policy, and that I know, speaking for myself, that human nature is we're probably not going to keep turning the pages until we get through all the policies that a reader or a new worker per se would go to try to look for the answer to what they're trying to get guidance on. Occasionally policy contained non-policy requirements. They noted what we already knew, that policy is out of date. We've had a hard time keeping up with all the federal laws that are changing, as well as in the past 2 years, House Bill 53, House Bill 408, there have been a lot of changes in statutes that we have to bring policy and procedures up to date. They noted that some provisions that were identified seem more like suggestions rather than a policy. Policy fails to clearly establish what constitutes compliance with a policy, and that times policy contained unqualified exceptions. That we leave a window, an opening, an exception to a policy, but we're not clear enough about what those times for exceptions might be. They recommend to us that we identify a philosophical base from which the Office of Children's Service operates and who we seek to serve, that we spell out the basis for intervention and how intervention is to occur, standards for information gathering and our practice, decision-making, roles and responsibilities, relationships of those carrying out the intervention. They say to us that their suggestion is that we write all new policy and not revise the old. Let me just take a breath there. And lastly, they recommend that we establish a method for reviewing policy drafts to assure that they meet criteria and effectively provide direction, regulation, and support for the Office of Children's Services intervention approach. I was happy to tell you what we had done with regard to the other reports about what we've done so far in response to what we knew were issues already occurring within the Office of Children's Services. This one takes me a little bit aback, because in order to do it right, it's going to involve a high level of effort. I understand more clearly than I've ever understood that there's the need, the absolute need to do that, and why and how it can be more helpful to both new workers coming in who are frustrated with this overwhelming system they've chose to work in, and both for community stakeholders and those on the outside who are seeking to understand why we do what we do. So, but I can't tell you that I have a plan. I'm going to be seeking lots of consultation for how we go about embarking on these recommendations. And last but certainly not least is we asked the contractor to look at our training curriculum, that specifically for new employees coming in. We call it TONE, the training and orientation for new employees. We asked them to look at that specifically because we were concerned about our turnover rate and hearing from staff who haven't stayed long that the job is undoable, they don't feel as prepared as they need to be, and that we were concerned about that front end of practice, that being investigations and workers hitting the ground running when they come back from that two-week training. What we learned from the contractor is that the training on information collection is far too general to provide staff with a specific practice standard necessary for effective intervention, that the curriculum does not explicitly qualify what specific information is important to gather to properly assess the safety of children and achieve overall objectives of the investigation, that although the curriculum begins by promoting family-centered practice and being family-focused and looking at families holistically, the general emphasis in going on through the curriculum tends to be about the legal aspects of the job and the making a case of a child in need of protection, that filing that legal petition. So we lose the momentum of our intended focus, which is a family-centered orientation and preventing removal whenever possible and working with kin and working with community partners in the battle against child abuse and neglect. And on the whole, the training content associated with information collection is not conducive to conducting effective assessments. There's an unclear or interchangeable terms used to and a blending of essential concepts necessary for a child protection worker, that it's confusing to staff the differences between child maltreatment, risk to children, and safety of children. Three very different concepts that get rolled into one. It's an issue that we're working on with regard to our new safety assessment model that really comes from 1997 in the federal mandate called the Adoption and Safe Families Act, where the federal government said that we must do a better job at assessing the safety, permanency, and well-being of children. So risk and safety not being the same, that we need to continue to improve in that area. And lastly, they give an indication that there's a vague, non-specific description of the relationship between safety assessment decision and the safety planning that needs to happen as a result of that safety assessment. They recommend that we employ the Adoption and Safe Families Act as a foundation or framework, which makes perfect sense when I see it in writing, because it's what the feds measure us against. When the feds came to do the federal review in 2003, those were the same dynamics that they measured us again. And for your information, they'll be back in 2008 to measure us again. And so makes sense that we would use that same logic as a foundation for our new worker training. That our mission should be apparent in the curriculum and define who we aim to serve. That it needs to be structured in a more linear format rather than teaching topics, but rather lay out case management for workers so that they can see it linearly. That there needs to be a clear distinction in curriculum regarding the difference between maltreatment risk and safety, and far much more time spent on safety planning, that being how to keep kids safely in their home to prevent removal of children from their families. I'm happy to say that this is an area that we have been working on in the past year. We had gotten surveys back. We get evaluations back from our training academy, who we contract with the University of Alaska Anchorage. And so it's an area that we've worked on, and how we went about that was to form what we call a TONE, Training and Orientation for New Workers Advisory Group, where we got statewide representation from the Office of Children's Services, along with tribal partners, and to look at all aspects of TONE to have it become more user-friendly, more family-focused, and more in line with cultural sensitivity and cultural competency all throughout the life of a case and all through the life of the training that's provided, and not just a session or a course that then workers are expected to apply to other areas, but all throughout. So that's something that we're particularly proud of, that we had started that work, and we'll use this to expand and continue to polish that work that's going on already. We have also learned, we got a report from the university about other states' curriculums. We're trying to glean information from other states about new worker training. If that's an area that we lose staff within the first year or first year and a half, it's an area that we need to continue to improve. And what we've been learning is that lots of states provide a longer version of core training to new workers, much more dynamic and involved than our two-week session. So that's something that we're going to have to continue to look at, how we're going to be able to do that with the resources we have. I think that may conclude the overview of the reports. I've done the overview what will be now the 10th time. Last week I went and did a tour around as many OCS field offices as I could, so that in the effort of downward communication and giving them a heads up what the contents of the reports were before I started to talk about them publicly. So I'm afraid that I may have missed or glossed over some of the finer points. So I'm available for questions. And Commissioner, did you have anything else that you wanted to note?
Thank you, Tammy. I just, again, want to thank the committee and thank you all for your continually asking the questions that help us improve the system. I particularly want to thank, although he's not here, Representative Coghill and others that have helped us noodle through the issues of confidentiality. Absolutely, we believe confidentiality is important for children, particularly children that have been harmed or at risk of harm. However, we don't want our organization using confidentiality as a reason that we're not doing our best work, not only internally, but with our partners outside of state government. And we also are very much in this process defining what is our role. What's our role as the department? What's the role of the Office of Children's Services and other divisions within our department? And how do we make sure, because we can't do this work ourselves, that we're engaging other partners effectively? And so you're going to see more questions asked and more things change as time goes on. You know, I really am a firm believer that it's about the questions, and that if we aren't having the honest discussion like we're having today and talking about the difficult things that are not working well, we're not going to be able to make improvements. And that's the spirit that this is offered in. I also want to applaud the Office of Children's Services and Tammy and others that have been there a long time, that are willing to take the deep breath when we say, contractors say you need to rewrite the policy from scratch because, frankly, it doesn't make sense unless you've been in the system a long time. That's pretty daunting when you're worrying about trying to return phone calls, keep children safe, balance all the things on your plate. But I do think it's very important because, again, it gets at the worker in the field can't return the phone call if the policy's not clear, the training's not clear, and their focus is on trying to keep those kids safe, which is where it should be. So lots of work to be done, and we would appreciate the questions that you will have today and as you move forward and look through this report. And again, thank you for allowing us to make this presentation.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Elton?
I'm going to begin by confessing I'm not an expert in this arena, although I think I share with 59 other legislators the knowledge that this is one of the most important functions state government has. I also want to compliment you. Going through a program audit like this is a very brave thing to do, a very necessary thing, but a very brave thing to do, and I'm pleased to hear that you're going to take these benchmarks and be measured against them in 2008. I think that is what program audits are all about. But I will say that the thing that bothered me is I listened. And I'm sure I missed some things, but clarifying policy, training, communication, shifting more work to clerical and away from frontline staff, community relations, brown bag lunches, gathering feedback, communications with tribes, curriculum review, rewriting policies. I mean, I guess, and there are some others that I jotted down here, but I thought it would be boring to continue. I guess the concern that I have is that given the absolutely the absolute imperative that we protect children in the state, I mean, and there was a notation that some staff members thought you need to double the staff to provide good services. How did we arrive at, you know, six additional people? I mean, I don't know how you're doing what you're doing now. I don't know how you can improve without more resources. And so, given the real importance of the service that you provide or that you try to provide, how do you come down with 6 new people in this budget. I don't understand that, given the challenges that you've listed and that were identified by the contractor.
And through the chair, Senator Elkin, I'll begin, and Tammy can add on. You raise good points, and part of the dilemma is if you were to fund 100 new positions today, we would not be able to assimilate those and do the work that we need to do to retain the good workers we already have and keep the system going. And so part of what we're trying to balance here is taking the information that we have and moving forward in a way so that we can keep the workers we have that are dedicated, empower them to do their job, and not focus only on recruitment. Part of what you heard Tammy say is in the past we focused on recruitment and retention, and we've had almost a revolving door of we bring people out in, we burn them out, we throw them out the back end. And what we want to work on in this next year, and that's why we only asked for 6 positions in the current budget, is focusing on retaining those folks that we have, supporting them in their work, bringing on 6 more social workers, and then, as was stated today in the Senate Finance Budget Subcommittee for our department, we will be back to tell you what else we need to do this work more effectively. So your question is right on target that, yes, this is not the end of the story. 6 positions is not going to completely fill the need. This is the beginning. And I'll let Tammy add.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I do appreciate those comments as well. And what I realized when I worked through these reports and trying to make sense of it all is that there's so many things that we can do to improve. I mean, what I heard all throughout these reports in one way or another is communication in working together with our community partners. Community partners want to help us. They want in. And that sometimes I think in the hustle and bustle of trying to do it all, we're not as responsive as we need to be. And I think we need to keep changing the culture of our organization to invite community stakeholders to the table. We provide all kinds of grants to grantees who provide the actual service. We serve more as case managers, certainly far more than when I used to do this work more than 20 years ago. We rely on others to help us, and so we need to continue to improve those partnerships, retain the staff we have, because part of the problem in terms of keeping up with workload has to do that we're in this business of continuing to train new staff and them coming on, and because they're given such high caseloads when they come in, those are the ones that leave right away. So we need to retain all of the experience and knowledge so that we can bring new staff on and have them not be as burdened as what they've been in the past year.
Madam Chair, if I could follow up. I understand that. And I don't want to seem argumentative, and you can just tell me if I'm wrong. It seems to me that burnout is a real problem. Turnover is a real problem. And in a management school, you know, what you learn is that you're forcing people to do too much and you're paying them too little, and that's why they decide to do something different. And I mean, given the fact that you note that one of your goals is to return phone calls in a timely manner, I just don't understand how better communications can happen without more help. I don't understand. I don't think people are leaving because they don't think what they're doing is important. I think that most of the people that you have think this is maybe one of the most important things they could and should be doing. And it may be unfair for me to base what my knowledge of this on anecdotal stories and reading between the lines of your testimony today and what the contractor found. But it just seems to me that you don't solve a turnover program by better communications and then telling them they have to go out and do more brown bag lunches. What you do is you solve the turnover program by giving people the assistance they need in the office, whether it's clerical so that they can do more frontline work, or whether it's more frontline workers so that you reduce the caseload, you make people feel like they're being successful in their job because they're not overwhelmed. And if I'm wrong, you can correct me, but it seems to me that given everything that you've reported today, that you don't move ahead, you know, by adding six people. I don't understand that.
And through the chair, Senator Elton, the other thing I would remind us all is that we do have several positions that are not currently filled, and that's part of what we're continually doing is trying to make sure we fill the positions we do have, and that in an environment where we were looking at taking budget reductions, this is in fact a place where we're adding six brand new positions. And so you're exactly right. It's not the ideal, and certainly if we, you know, had all the resources in the world, perhaps we would be able to be in a different place than we are in a year. But even if we had all those resources, what I'm saying to you is I'm not sure that we could put them to good use in the next year, given everything else that we need to do. So I think you need to hold us accountable.
I appreciate what you're saying. I don't mean to interrupt. But if that were the – I'm sorry. I'm getting up on my soapbox a little bit, and you can cut me off whenever you want, Madam Chair.
I'm going to let you speak for now.
I don't hear the tourism promoters coming and saying, we don't yet have the resources to handle an additional $20 million that we want to promote tourism. I mean, they're saying we need $20 million to do a better job. And they're not saying, but don't give it to us until we're better prepared for it. And I don't think that's what Child Protective Services should be saying.
May I address that a little bit also? I understand what your frustration might be, and I also hear what they are saying also. They want to bring these six people on, and they want to be able to keep those six people, but they also are concerned about those that's already there and been there and giving them the relief that they want. We might be able to bring on 50 new staff, but if you haven't bought them in the correct way, the proper training, the openness of the agency, and to give them the go-ahead to do the job correctly, we're wasting our time bringing them on. But what I think what we're doing now is that the division, from what I know about it, felt that they had the whole world on their shoulder, that they were had to take care of everything. It seems now with the reports that you are given that you're more open, you're ready to involve the community. They can help us in a lot of cases. If we had dealt with it that way, our line workers wouldn't be overwhelmed and wouldn't be doing all the paperwork and not being able to return the phone calls, trying to take care of everything that's got to be taken care of. Because I know there are people out there that want to help. You got faith-based, nonprofit organization, individual, parents, other relatives, friends, all now feel maybe that they can be a part of OCS. In the past, they didn't feel that way. It was always, it's confidential. We can't discuss that with you. This is a decision that has to be made, but we can't have community involvement. I know there's some changes been made, not enough, but we're moving in the right direction. And so, yeah, I'd like to give them, you know, 10, 15, 20 coming on right now. But if we bought 20 on and lost 10 from the other side, we haven't done anything. And we do need to keep those workers. You said 70-some percent of the people believe that what they're doing is quite important.
Yes.
And they want to do what they're doing.
That's correct.
Hey, we got something to work with there. And if we can continue to improve our communication, be open with the things that we are doing, I think we're moving in the right direction. And I'd like to ask you just off like this, you had the feds to come in and do in 05, was it 05 that they came and did?
Madam Chair, it was 2003.
2003.
Seems
they
like
will
it
come
yesterday.
Back in 08.
Right.
If they were to come now, do you feel that you're better prepared with the information that you presented to us, that you could do a better job?
Madam Chair, I think that there are many improved systemic factors that I think that going through the first review and the subsequent performance improvement plan that we went through as a result prepared us to be more systemically focused. I think that there's room for us to improve with regard to actual child outcomes and family outcomes. I think we have improved. We passed our performance improvement plan. The feds signed off. We're no longer in that plan because we made the necessary improvements. But as far as children and our families are concerned, there's always room for improvement, in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yeah, a couple of questions. Can you, you talk about licensing staff and caseworkers and the job responsibilities. What does a, what's the background of a, or the difference of a licensing staff and a caseworker start off with?
Senator, through the chair, there are two kinds of, there are three frontline worker classifications. That is a child care licensing specialist, which requires a degree but not a social work degree. And there are we call them CSSs, child services specialists. That requires a degree but not a social work degree. And we have social workers. So there are three types of workers that come on board. The licensing specialists do require or are just for the licensing of prospective foster and adoptive homes. They don't do frontline child protective service work. The child services specialists and the social workers do our frontline child protective service work with assessing the safety of children and working with families.
Could I follow up here?
Yes,
a couple of questions. And what is the educational level that say a caseworker has to have?
They must have a college bachelor's degree in a related field, just not solely social work.
Some time back when we was questioning this, I was told some of the workers got advanced through the union rather than their skills. This is like 8 or 9 years ago. You've been around for a while. Was that a case then?
Senator, through the chair, I'm sorry to say that I wasn't in Alaska at that time. I was working in Child Protective Services in another state. Maybe you're referring to the time when the licensure of social workers became required. And if that's true, if that's the time you're speaking of, what I know from having been in Alaska for the last 3 years is there aren't enough social workers to go around to do the business. And so, and the other thing that we know from experience and being in the Office of Children's Services is that there are many qualified, wonderful professionals who do the work of Child Protective Services that do not have a social work degree.
And a follow-up, I have in my office in the past, say police work, required my staff, I've made a judgment call on my part that I didn't think they fully understood or appreciated our police thing. So I sent them out on a Friday night with a police officer. And they come back with the same, different attitude about mm-hmm. police and the police work. Yeah. And the same thing, I've had my staff go out in the field with caseworkers mm-hmm. and see what it really opened their eyes up. Do you still allow that?
Senator Cowdery, absolutely. We welcome it.
Well, we'll give our staff something to do next summer because I think that is really a good thing because everybody thinks, you know, the talk in the street, in other words, oh, they don't do nothing, you know, and just like you said about making that judgment decision or answering phone calls or this or that. So I think it's pretty good for staff people to go see rather than just prepare some questions for me to ask, go out there and see it themselves.
Thank you. One of the concerns that you addressed was the overrepresentation of minority children in the system. And I wanted to know if you've given that real priority, and what do you have that you're working on to cut those numbers down?
Madam Chair, it is a huge priority for us. We are looking not only just at the numbers of children who are disproportionately represented, but also at outcomes. So once a child of color comes into the system, what are then their outcomes in terms of return home and adoption and all those different issues, because we have found that there's disparity all throughout the system and not just those kids who enter foster care. And I think that that's something that has been newer to us. The social work field and the child welfare field in particular has really highlighted that issue, and we've been fortunate enough to work with Casey Family Programs on what they have called a breakthrough series, whereby we're going and learning, teaching, doing activities that look at our own racism, at structural racism, at institutional racism, and really taking note of who we are as an organization and the decisions that we make, both at the leadership level and also at the line level. And we talk about it. The R word gets used freely. We talk about racism and what it means, and it's no longer something that we don't consider as a part of how decisions are being made. It's a hard subject, but one that we've faced head on and are looking at every bit of our decision making throughout the process. And that's why I'm happy to say that we have involved our tribal partners and those who are interested in being a part of our training advisory group that's about providing cultural sensitivity and in expecting cultural competency all throughout the training process, and not just as a session that you pass, but rather as a part of all of the process that we go through with families.
And all that sounds good, and that's good. Once they're in the system, you hope that you can carry all those things out. The thing I'm concerned about most, though, is that many of the kids that come into the system don't need to be in the system in the first place. So what are we doing to keep that from happening? You know, are we involving family members, other community people that might be able to help you? Do we have any particular workers that are just working with children in their home to find out what the problem that need to be worked on and addressed prior to moving them out to put them in to foster care or some other institution placement?
Madam Chair, I, if you'll indulge me just for 1 second, I have spent the better part of 22 years trying to do that very thing. It's one of the things that when I was offered this leadership position, I thought that is the one thing I'm going to change, because I know that kids can be with their families more often than the system allows them to be, and the system meaning all of those who make up the child welfare field, not just OCS, but judges, attorneys, I mean, all of the players.
Yes.
And it's one of the things that purposefully is a part of our new safety assessment model, in making a clear distinction between children who are at risk versus children who are unsafe.
Right.
Big difference. And I think that the child welfare field, up until most recently, has blurred that line and thought that they should help families who children are at risk, and the help was removing them and then upping the ante on families, so that families then parent perfectly. And I dare say that there's a lot of parents whose children are at risk, but they are good parents and they can safely parent their children. And making the distinction in the assessment process between risk and safety is one of the first ways that we're doing that. And secondly, as a part of the safety assessment process, which I'm so pleased is a part of these reports, is safety planning. That unsafe children does not equal removal.
Yes.
That they're, by bringing families to the table and community providers, community partners, such as the team decision-making model in Anchorage, that we're able to involve those people who have a stake in that family's life and have them get involved in effective safety planning, so children can remain in their homes with services being provided in the home. So it's one of the things that I'm most passionate, I'm passionate about a lot when it comes to the Office of Children's Services, but that's one of the things I'm most passionate about, because what I know, having been a part of this system for as long as I have, is that kids are always want to get home, and parents always want their kids to be home. So let's expand on that and make that happen. Not all parents who abuse or neglect their children means that they can't have their children in their home. It just means we have to find a different way to work with them.
So do we have any grants out there that might take a nonprofit group that can help us in that area? Or do we have some unit, people within the units to work in that particular area? Could you just sort of give me a breakdown, and I don't need it now, and where you are now and where you expect to go.
Okay.
In that light, because I think it's so important that we do that. I'm impressed with the report that you gave. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, but as long as you are able to get the message across, and you have taken this to the public, right? You said you've gone to public agencies and...
Madam Chair, we've been going into public agencies and talking about our new safety assessment model. I have the pleasure of being a part of a press conference in just 1/2 hour where folks will get to hear about the reports.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, they need to hear about it. I won't take up any more time. Yes, Senator Elton?
Well, Senator Cowdery,
for my information, when you go into a family and the kids are being abused or, you know, there's problems, is what percentage of it is alcohol-related or drug-related?
Senator Cowdery, through the chair, huge, gigantic. In the old days, we used to talk about the numbers of families on one hand that had an alcohol or substance abuse problem that is preventing effective parenting, and nowadays we talk about how many don't. It's huge. I can't give you the exact percentage right here, right now, but huge.
Madam Chair, just...
Yes.
And I know everybody's under time constraints here, so if you don't know the answers off the top of your head, you can just get back to me. I'd be interested in knowing, Commissioner, you noted that you have positions open, and we've added positions in the recent past. At some point, could you let me know, and perhaps the other members of the committee, how long the positions have been open, I mean, how long it typically takes to fill a position, and why it may take a long time, maybe some assumptions that you're making on why it takes such a long time. I'd be interested in how the caseload for Child Protective Services compares to industry standards or social work standards. I've seen that number in the past. My recollection is that we're higher than the recommended caseload. So again, first, how many open positions? How long does it take to fill a position? Caseloads, and then what your turnover rate is. My understanding, I mean, it's defined as high, but if you could let us know what high means.
That'd be good. And did you have another question?
No.
Okay, I appreciate you coming forward. I know you got to get ready for your press conference, and that information that you're going to get, you can share it with all of us, and we'll make sure that it gets distributed to other people here in the building also that might need that. Your work is good that you're doing. I encourage you to keep on improving in these areas. And I guess the question that I have for you now is, before we close, are there certain areas that we need to address as legislators for as policy changes that need to be made or things that need to come to us in order for you to carry them out?
Madam Chair, absolutely nothing is coming to mind right at this time. I think the Office of Children's Services needs to catch up with the practice changes and the field changes and the frontline changes that need to come about with regard to House Bill 53, House Bill 408, and all the federal changes. Frankly, one of the other things you'll see in these reports is we're trying to do too much too fast. So I think everybody's on change. What do they call fatigue? Change fatigue. That's, you know, the common it's a buzzword right now, but if there ever was an agency that is going through that, it would probably be us. So we need to catch up and do better at what we need to do before we go through a lot more change, big picture change.
All right. Thank you for taking the time to come in and share this with us.
Thank you.
And we'll disclose at this time if there's no other comments or questions. Thank you.